LV, our home insurance comes from the heart. It's not just about giving you a personal claims handler to take care of you all the way. It's about looking after you in other ways too. Like when you go direct to us, buy online and get a massive 25% discount. To see how much you could save with the Which Insurance Provider of the Year 2017, go direct to lv.com. Online discount for new customers only, excludes home emergency and home legal expenses.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Worldwide. Podcasting since 2005. Take it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Back on the scene. With your host, yeah. Podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go. Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 629. This is your host, Danny. And guess what? We have the whole crew up in here. So let's start out with Pete. Welcome back, man.
Up in here.
What up in here?
What up, dude?
What's up, man?
How are you?
What's going on?
I'm all right. I'm doing all right. It's been a busy week. Sorry I missed the last show, but...
It's all good, man. It's all good.
It is what it is.
Hopefully you will join us on our next one. We're going to have fan mail episode because have a lot of voicemails.
I should be there. Yeah.
Okay. And also we have Paris in the house. Paris.
Hey, I'm looking forward to playing some checkers with Microsoft.
You checkers spend all day Microsoft. Just waiting to use that line.
I know.
Well, hey, they're providing the checkerboard for me. Might as well bring the checkers, right?
Oh God, Paris. By the way, guys, I've been playing Resident Evil 7. Shout out to Camcom to send me a code. And wow, that game is legit. But I heard mixed reviews about the VR version of the game. I don't know. I got to talk to more people. I'm like, really? They say it changes the experience compared to like the actual game when you play the on your TV. So, but yeah, dude, scary ass game, man.
But
are you into scary games, you guys?
From what I've read, I don't have it, but from what I've read... Allegedly, the definitive version should be PlayStation VR edition. Am I wrong? Do you think that's the better version? Because this is just what I've been reading off of my social media feed for the last 2 days. Everybody's talking about if you're going to get it, you should get the VR edition.
I thought you could play the VR edition or the. The regular
the PC version, but that's the other thing I have read in some instances where the PC port maybe has been maybe broken or it's not as good as it should be. So
really, okay, because I have the Xbox One version, so that one it has some Xbox Anywhere, so you could play on PC or the Xbox. So I haven't played the PlayStation version, so that's why any listeners out there, please send us voicemails, let us know how it is. The VR version, because I'm very, very curious about that. Because let me tell you, playing this game on my TV, it is creepy as hell. Super scary. So I can imagine, the VR experience, but we'll see. Just send us feedback, and I'm very curious about that, man. So, all right, head over to play.it/gamertag. Listen to our past episodes, or you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories.
Send us your feedback or questions. Jump. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so we're back here. And should we talk about Scorpio very quick, Paris, before we talk about Ghost Recon Wildlands? Because we have a lot of content about that, so... Should we talk about that very quick?
Sure, and I think we can read this email that we got today, which kind of leads right into it.
Okay,
so this is from, I'll call him Camaro because I love him. I know him. Anyways, he says, "Hello, gangs. I hope that you're doing well. I just read on IGN that the Scorpio white paper has been leaked, and as I read, I noticed that Microsoft will be doing something similar to Sony checkerboard rendering." What say you to this? To me, it sounds like there is going to be no native 4K like they previously announced. Thank you and keep up the awesome work. Camaro, a.k.a. Black Flash. I always wanted to just call him Camaro. But anyway, shout out to him. So I read that because, you know, I saw the Digital Foundry video that you posted in our private chat. And I watched the whole thing earlier today. And look, this is obviously rumor and speculation. This is not final product. This is not necessarily what Phil Spencer is going to announce at E3 2017. And as a matter of fact, this white paper goes back to E3 2016, excuse me. But it's interesting that Microsoft is talking about checkerboard rendering with their 4K, you know, which is similar to what Sony is doing with the PlayStation 4 Pro. And I'll just say this, and you guys comment however you want, obviously, but if they wind up not doing true native 4K, and when I say native 4K, I'm not talking about indie games and things like that, because even the PlayStation 4 Pro can do that. But if they got to basically do some tricks under the hood to get 4K to your screen for the AAA games like the Gears and the Halos of the world, all I'll say is this. What's the difference? What's the difference between the two? Sure, one might be more powerful than the other, but if they're both 4K 30 at the end of the day, because the other thing was talking about some tricks about frame rate as well, but if they're both 4K 30 at the end of the day, really it comes down to price again, right? Which, if that's the case, then this thing better not be over $399. If it's not doing something that I need a GTX 1080 Ti or a Titan X on a PC to do, if it's not doing true 4K, at 60 frames, I've been saying it for the longest, it better be $399. If they're doing checkerboard rendering as well, which at the end of the day does not matter, to be honest with you, because you play the game, it looks good, it plays great, who cares, right? But all I'm saying is we want to get into this fanboy war technical nonsense BS. If it's just doing checkerboard rendering, they better not be crazy enough to try and charge me $500 for this. That's all I'm saying.
So let's go into the details. So no ES RAM confirmed, right?
Because not confirmed.
So that's
again,
what
rumor. All this is all rumor.
Right. All rumor and speculation. But from what we've been able to, what everybody, including Digital Foundry and Eurogamer and Trusted Reviews and everybody else, 6 teraflops is the magic number. We now know that, and I'm still not able to get a full, clear, concise answer on this, if it's going to be AMD's Vega or if they're still going to be using, what was the, what's, it's not going to be Ryzen, it's going to, what is it, the Jaguar CPU? From what we've seen, we're looking at 12 gigs of GDDR5 memory, 8 cores. Do we really think it's going to be full 4K? Like native 4K? Like, I don't know.
If you go by what Digital Foundry is saying, no, it won't.
So let me ask you this, guy, for you guys. Did not only Microsoft, but also Sony, I feel like both company lied because they're promoting something that is not truly, it's not true at all. Like, they're saying that it's 4K, but it's not technically true 4K. Did these both companies lie then? To the consumers?
I don't know if it's going to be, and you could take this obviously with a grain of salt. Obviously the first party games are going to be those that take advantage or get a truer representation of what they consider 4K gaming versus third party titles or maybe even second party titles that have to cater to both consoles, so they may have to not go as
disagree with you on that. Disagree with you on that. Disagree with you on that because look at the PC. PC has to cater to all of them, but yet a PC can do it native. So again, if this thing is truly the monster that they're claiming it to be, shouldn't have to do tricks under the hood just because you're not a full partner of Microsoft. Shouldn't matter if you're first party, third party, or second party. So I don't necessarily think a first party studio is going to have a technical advantage over a third party studio, other than the fact that maybe they can do some additional rendering techniques that a third party cannot. But I think when we talk about straight up native 4K. And again, watch the video and take your own opinions for yourself. But they're talking about doing some tricks with like the lighting, like maybe rendering the lighting and things like that at 1080p while doing some other things at 4K to be able to hit that 2160p. That's not true native 4K, in my opinion.
So
again, let me say this one last thing. Again, I don't care if it's 4K when I'm playing the game. I don't care what you did under the hood to get there because it's 4K, right? That for Microsoft or Sony. I'm just saying for the people that care way too much about this stuff and are looking at all the technical specs, you need to kind of dial it back a bit if Microsoft, if what Phil said a year ago was just marketing speak. Because if this rumor is true, that's all it was marketing speak. And that's what we need to realize.
So if I believe the term that Microsoft is using is sparse rendering, whereas Cherney and the boys at Sony are saying it's checkerboard technique. If it still comes out at 4K, does it make a difference if it's full 100% native 4K as long as it's still giving you that 4K experience at the screen? Does it really make a difference?
For me, it doesn't. I don't care.
So what is the point of buying this console if it's only about 4K?
Well, that's the question. That's the question that the consumer that buys it has to ask. Are you buying it for its 4K capabilities? Are you buying it because it's just the latest console? Or are you buying it you know, because it's Xbox? You know,
I think to me, the reason why I'm buying it not because of 4K, because I really don't care about that stuff. I'm more of, okay, I have a powerful console and I could try out, you know, some VR games that, because I don't have a PC, so I can't play VR through that. You know, I don't have a PlayStation 4 VR there. So I think this will be like a better opportunity, maybe a little better experience trying it out through this console. That's why the reason why I'm buying it. I could care less about the whole 4K stuff, but I know there's people out there that really care about that stuff, you know, so. Huh. It's going to be very interesting. A very interesting E3. That's for sure. So before we go to the next topic, what do you think that Microsoft should do to really change people's mind with this, man? Because now I heard that there's not going to be no Halo games this year.
Well, that's not a surprise. I mean, you know, well, there's Halo Wars.
I'm talking about like in the holidays when the Scorpio comes out. So what they should do, man, to actually promote this. I mean, I know Forza are probably going to release a new Forza game.
Well, I think if anything, that's probably the title that has the most powerful engine, or the engine capable of doing it. And from what I've been reading all day and watching the video, it's probably the likely candidate for what they're going to do and should be the thing that they use to demo at E3, if possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if there's going to be a title, I believe they said that Microsoft said that they were able to have a 1080p title running in 4K. So, and I think that goes back to what was alluded to in the white paper about how they're taking a half res of 1080 and literally just doubling the pic, or doubling it up or something like that. Paris, if you know what I'm talking about, please make sense of what I'm trying to say, but. It's like
I know what you're talking about. That's why I was saying people need to watch that Digital Foundry video, because they go in more in depth than we possibly would right here talking about that stuff. And that's what I mean. They're going to be able to take something that's native 1080p, get it up to 4K, all that. They're talking some 1800p, things like that. But it's like I said, and you already said, end of the day, when you're playing the game, it's in 4K, right? Does it really matter how it got there? That's a question people have to ask themselves. And that's why I've been saying it since last year, you know, and I'll say it again. That's why people need to let go of all this fanboy nonsense. Play the games because they're freaking fun. Don't play it because what someone on the stage says in marketing speak, because that's all it comes down to. Oh, and true native 4K, blah, 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 blah. And then a year later, allegedly, we'll see. They might be backtracking off of that a little bit. But at the end of the day, does it matter? It's still a powerful machine. It's still going to be the most powerful console on the market. It's still going to have amazing games that you can play in 4K. Enjoy them. That's all.
Right. So the phrase that I was alluding to was, this is how it reads out. On Project Scorpio, a half-resolution effect rendered at 1080p and bilaterally upsampled to 4K could look as good or better than the same effect rendered at full resolution on Xbox One. For example, on Xbox One, the effect is produced at full resolution, say 900p, but on Project Scorpio, the effect is produced at 1080p, which is half resolution. So essentially, they're up-resing their 1080p into a 4K frame buffer to make it as close as humanly possible to 4K, if not 4K-esque, right? And again, if it looks like 4K and it blows your mind and it gives you 4K-like experience, is it a win? I just want to know what that premium price tag is. I would then say on the flip side of that,
just again, you know, because PlayStation 4 Pro is already out. It's been out. It will be significantly cheaper than whatever Project Scorpio is going to be this holiday. And then Sony is going to be able to say the same thing that Microsoft is saying with PS4 Pro. All the third-party games are going to be in 4K. They're all going to look the same, but we're $100 cheaper. You know, that's the one thing that Microsoft is going to have to, they're going to have their message so freaking on point at E3 when it comes to this thing. Mm-hmm. Because even if it's $399, Sony could pull a power move, drop Pro down to $320 or something crazy like that. The point is, it's going to be the cheaper product, right? Microsoft is going to have to market that and make people understand why you're paying more for it. And not just because I love Xbox, because there's people that are going to have no problem playing on either system. And that's going to be the key for them, because at the end of the day, exclusives are great, but it's third party. Danny, third party again, Nintendo Switch. Third party is what sells consoles. I'm just telling you.
Yeah. And with no supreme launch title to go with it, I mean, by the time Scorpio comes out, there's going to be a shelf full of games that are going to be available that take advantage of this on the PlayStation. So like you said, they've got to come out guns blazing, you know, with a reason for people to throw the extra coin at getting this when they can just get a PS4 Pro that gives you that experience already.
Exactly. And somebody go slap Nintendo upside the head for charging the $300 for the Switch while you're at it.
Anyways, it's funny because a lot of people have been hitting me up or been calling the voicemail or, you know, replying on Twitter. Either they cancel their pre-order or they're like, Danny, I'm out there, I'm pre-ordering. Like it's like either they like my opinion about this whole Switch thing, or they just hate it and they're like, no, I'm Team Paris. So it's been a very interesting week so far, man. So it's all good, man. Look, I bought it because I'm a fan of Nintendo. I'm not forcing anyone to buy it. I have my reasons. I'm a fan. So
small hands.
Paris.
Small hands.
Hey,
you get it.
No, look, Paris wants to wait. That's fine. Eventually he's going to buy it. So it's all good.
Yeah. And that's what I think people need to understand. Cause you know, obviously some people get it that we were just having fun on the last episode with this, but some people took it a little too serious at the same time, but I'm going to get one. It's like, so, you know, dude had hit us up on Twitter right before we start recording. He even said, you know, he's like, look, I'm going to wait till the holiday when they're going to bundle a game with it. And then I'm going to get it. And I'm like, yep. To me, that's a smart move. It'll probably have a Mario Odyssey bundle. I'll pick it up then. Zelda, look, because I'm a cheapskate. Zelda, I'll probably find it used somewhere, and then I'll get that too. Done. I'm happy. And yeah, I got to switch.
That's it. It's all good, man. So let's talk about Ghost Recon Wildlands. You know, a couple of days ago, I just went to San Francisco, and I spent a couple of hours playing this game. And actually, I'm going to use parts of this audio, and I'm going to also create a video, and you're going to see me like playing with the game and everything, some gameplay footage and stuff. So I'm going to play that on YouTube and Facebook and so on. So just be on the lookout out there. But anyways, I've been having a great time with this game, dude. I've been playing this now for a couple hours. I think we were playing from like 3:30 all the way to 8. So basically what we were doing was we played the single player by ourselves. And then there was another session that was just strictly co-op. So I was playing with other people that were at the event too. And when you play the single player, you basically going to have like three other AI with you the whole time in the game. The whole time. You know, they'll help you. You could do commands and everything. But let me tell you, once you do the whole co-op thing with this, it's a totally different experience. You guys could go anywhere. I find it more fun playing it co-op wise. And it's cool because everybody like got their own vehicles. You could either go in one vehicle, go all the way. But I was like, no, I'll meet you guys there. I had my little motorcycle and I went straight over there. And there was others that were using like helicopters and everything. We just wanted to experience like different ways to get like in a certain area, you know. So it was a lot of fun. I don't know, you guys play this too. I believe, was it E3 of last? Was it E3 last year?
Yeah. Yes.
We got to play this game too. How was your guys' experience playing the game, man? I think it was smooth to me last year, and once I played it again, it was still smooth. It was good, you know. We were playing the PlayStation version.
Well, I mean, just going back for me at E3, because we didn't get a chance to play it when we were in France. I mean, yeah, you remember me during that time. I was saying that was probably my favorite game of E3 that we got to play. I was loving it. I love the co-op aspect of it. And that's what really attracts me to this game, is being able to get with three other people and attack these missions any way we see fit. And, you know, no one playthrough can be the same. No, has to be the same, I should say. So that's what excites me about this. And just obviously everything, going to the studio, talking to all the people making a game, and just this world of Bolivia that they're making. I'm pretty excited to play it. I'm really looking forward to it.
And look, you guys have options. You could go either take your time self-wise, attack, or a bum rush, go all out, kill everybody like that. It's all up to you. And that's the thing that I like. It's just the freedom of, you could do whatever you want in this game. You know, there's a lot of side missions and a lot of places to go, man. So, like, when you pick a mission, you get to see, like, one of the bosses, and there's multiple missions per boss. So, it gets a little bit difficult after a while, man. It gets really, really difficult. There was one thing that I think there's like a radio, like a pirate radio. So it's basically the rebels talking to other people, hyping them up and everything. You have to protect that radio, because then you see the cartel going after you, man. And it gets really difficult, man. They could pop off from anywhere, man. Multiple vehicles coming, helicopters, all that stuff, man. So I don't know. I had a blast with this, and I can see myself playing this for a very, very long time. Having the, you know, if you have friends, play co-op. If not, you will still have fun playing in a single player. So, Pete, you want to say anything too about the game? I know you got to play it too.
Yeah, getting a chance to play it, and you know, as everybody has heard, obviously Paris and I, you know, got to go to Paris and visit with the folks at Ubisoft. I'm really, really looking forward, and not just because they flew us out to Paris and everything. I've said it before, Ghost Recon is one of my favorite franchises of all time. And the fact that they're bringing it out, you know, they're bringing it, you know, they're essentially resurrecting this once great franchise and bringing it back to what we've been playing and seeing. I'm so thrilled. I love the opt-in co-op opportunities that the game presents, that it doesn't matter if you've already gone through the game. You know, it doesn't matter that, you know, say like me and you are playing, it doesn't matter that you may have already gotten through the first two or three levels. You and the game will dynamically, you know, change itself to present the game back to us as if it was the first time you've played it. You know, you may just have, you may not just get experience credit for it, but it doesn't limit what our experience could be just because you decided to get it before me, or you decided to play it before me, or whatever. It's just the thought processes between, you know, whether it was Sam, sorry, the narrative director, the you know, because
okay.
When they did the storyline, you know, they both had an idea as to how to target the game, and then they had to work together to build this story narrative that we all play. So, you know, taking those two directions and melding them into one monster storyline that we're experiencing in this game is so cool, because usually a lot of this is already, you know, delineated out for us, and we're just playing the, you know, we're essentially on rails playing a game. But being able to just be thrown into the middle of this big, you know, country and say, okay, you can go wherever you want, it's up to you. You know, they just, you know, they don't restrict your the way you play the game, and the way that they have to tie all of those components in is really, really interesting. So I can't wait. March 7th can't come here fast enough.
And the good thing too is, you know, there's other places where there might be even multiple bosses in one region. So it's up to you. And I know, Paris, one of the conversations we were having right before we recorded was that if you go to a certain area, it could get really tough for you, man. Really tough. So I know you talked about that with, was it with Dominic? With you guys?
An interview? Yeah, we did. That previous interview, people go back and listen to the interview Pete and I did while we're in France with Dominic talking about that. He goes in depth talking about how all that's going to work with the difficulty.
Cool, man. It's cool. Yeah, so I recorded two interviews from the event. Remember, go to, you know, YouTube or follow us on Gamertag Radio on Facebook. I'm going to definitely post like gameplay footage and everything, man. So you guys can check it out, man. I had a blast. It was a lot of fun. And I, like you said, P, I can't wait, man, for March. This game is going to be really fun, man, once it comes out, man. So, all right. So, P, I know we have a sponsor for this week's episode.
Yep. So for the past few weeks, the family and I have been able to enjoy meals from our newest sponsor, Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and their mission is to make incredible cooking accessible to everyone. One of the great things about Blue Apron is the variety of new recipes. You tend to get into routines, and that eventually translates to lazy cooking, but not with Blue Apron. You know what furikake is? Yeah, it sounds funny. I know. I didn't until we had it as a result of one of their new recipes, and now it's almost like a game with our kids to see when the next meal with furikake will come around. Little do they know that their recipes are not repeated within a year and you'll never get bored. Blue Apron adds variety and flexibility to not just your meal, but your life schedule too. Why spend that extra time at the store when you can just have your meals delivered to your door every week? All you have to do is check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/gamertag. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/gamertag. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
All right, so we're going to play the interview right now. Once we come back, we have a couple things more to say here on Gamertag Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
No problem. So, hi, my name is Dominic Butler, and I'm the lead game designer on Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Let me ask you the first question, man. Do you have to see this documentary called Cocaine Cowboys?
I haven't. How is it?
No, it's really good. It reminded me a lot of of this game. Okay. Costa Rica. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So it's really good. It's about drugs and in Miami in the '80s and stuff. So
okay.
Yeah. So there's a part in the game that I'm not gonna mention anything about the story, but it reminded me a lot of that documentary. So that was cool. So I mean, it's a lot of fun, man. I played the game now for a couple hours now, single player and also a co-op. Why was it so important to have this world like this so open, and there was like so many things that you could do in there?
So I think what's important for us is because right from the beginning, we had a vision for a game that was focused on a kind of freedom of choice. So letting the player play how they want, where they want to move, you know, get around the world, use whatever they find. And this was like a way for us to kind of evolve the brand a little bit. It's something we wanted to do for quite a while. And so that's kind of informs then all our design decisions. It's the way we build the world. It's the way we build the missions. It's the way we tell the story. It's the way we build even our co-op and our solo, you know, how that those progressions merge together. All of that is informed by that kind of freedom of choice to just do what you want.
Um, You know what? I used the drone a lot. That was like my best friend right now. the thing is, I love taking my time. I don't like to just rush it. But I mean, you could do that if you want. That's an option if somebody wanted to play that way. But I love taking my time with the game and exploring everything too. So, what is it for you? For you, like, what is it that you like to do more? Like, taking your time or more of like the quick attack?
So I think I'm like, sometimes I want to do the take my time thing, and we definitely got those options there. I can get a little bit impatient. So sometimes, you know, when it goes live, then yeah. I'm quite happy with that. But me, maybe it's because of the design stuff that I'm more of like a systems guy, and I love playing with systems when they're there in games. And for us, one of the ones that I hope you got the chance to see is the way our factions interact with each other.
Oh, yeah, you tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So we've got different factions in the game. We've got obviously the Santa Blanca cartel. These are the guys that have moved into Bolivia and have kind of taken over the country. These guys are obviously not happy that you're there. You're there to, you know, take them down. So that's one of your enemies. Then, and as well as that, there's the Unidad. These guys are like a military force. They work for the corrupt local government. And these guys have been paid off by the Santa Blanca. And so there's this kind of uneasy, it's not really an alliance. They just don't fight directly. But you can spark a fight between them, which is cool. This is one of the things I like to do, where you've got the Unidad. These guys are very like heavy duty soldiers. They've got, you know, armored vehicles. They wear armor. They've got, you know, really great weapons and, you know, helicopters with rockets on them and, you know, all that kind of cool stuff. And if you can get the two factions near each other, and we give you some tools like the flare gun to kind of bring them in, if you can get one of the Santa Blanca guys to draw a weapon, then the Unidad are going to see that as an aggressive act, and they're going to open up on the Santa Blanca. And then you're going to start to get this interfaction fight that you can use to your advantage, sometimes sparking something and then just going right back into cover and let those two duke it out. And then you come in and clean up whoever's left. As well as that, we've got the Rebellion. And so these guys are the local Bolivians that are trying to fight back and take back the country. But they got like zero support. They, you know, they're poor, they're underfunded. And if you want, it's one of the factions that you can opt to help through some of the side content. You're going to meet them a few times during the main story. But in the optional side stuff, you can help these guys. And what's cool about it is that you get to, when you do stuff for them, you'll see like support options unlocked for you, right? So if you let's say help them spread a message through their radio, sort of portable radio stations, right?
And I mean, that was really tough.
Right? Okay, so you got to see that, right? So you activate this kind of this portable radio generator thing that's like out in, it can be in a field, sometimes they're in villages, you have to, you know, you can discover them in the world. And once you activate it, you saw it, right? But for the people that haven't played it, once you activate it, it starts broadcasting this message of rebellion across the airwaves. But the Santa Blanca want to shut it down really quick. So you're just going to get waves of guys coming in. You need to make sure that whole message gets played. Now, having completed something like that, you're going to get options like a mortar strike, right? So they'll be able to help you sometimes in the field by sort of launching some mortars wherever you're pointing at. And that's cool to get that kind of like, I do something for you, you do something for me. And, you know, like just that kind of exchange. And that was the start of it. But then we wanted to see how far we could take that. And we've got lots of different systems running in the world, like traffic and events and NPC, like agenda based on time of day and like factions and things like that. So we were looking at how else could we have these things influence each other. And so when you help the rebels, what actually, as well as getting that support back for you, you also get the rebels more present in traffic. You're going to see them more often in villages and towns and just, you know, out in the wilderness. They're just, you're going to see more of them around. And because these guys, like, organically and spontaneously without your input, are going to start fights with the Santa Blanca, with the Unidad, basically you got this support. You're changing not just your options, but you're kind of changing the dynamic of the world by your actions. And that's something that I love, I get a real kick out of, because I love just kind of seeing, like, I do one thing and then it sort of hits something else and something else and something else, and suddenly I feel a change, not just in a menu page somewhere, but actually like in the world.
And how, when it's co-op, how that affect the game like that in that way too?
So when you're playing in co-op or solo, we wanted to make sure that players had as similar an experience as possible. Obviously, playing with your friends is tons of fun, and no matter how we make our AI teammates, they're never going to be as much fun to play with as your friends, right? Like, that's, we're not pretending that that's going to be anything else. But our AI teammates are great because they're not going to complete the game for you, but they're going to support your playstyle. You know, you go loud, they'll go loud. If you're doing a lot of recon, they'll support you in that. When you're quiet and being stealthy, they'll do the same thing. And you can give them basic orders. When you're in co-op, it's a different thing. You don't have the AI teammates anymore, but you have that same progression. You have the same story, you have access to exactly the same stuff. And you as a player, you have just one Ghost Recon Wildlands progression, right? So that's not a solo game or a co-op game. It's Ghost Recon Wildlands. And you might start it in solo. You started, you know, just getting used to it. Maybe you just bought it and you turn it on. You're playing. You don't have any friends on your list yet. Maybe you do. Maybe you want to go play with some strangers. Maybe not. It's up to you. But you're playing it. And you know, you're talking with your friends saying we should play together. When you decide to play together, it doesn't matter how long they've been playing for. It doesn't matter what they've been doing in their game. They're going to bring their progression into your game. And we've got a system that merges those progressions for the duration of the session. And then you'll go apart again once you once the session's over. But what that really means is that as a player, I'm not having to like make a choice of like, oh, I could start playing, but you know, maybe you know, Mike's not going to be around until 10, so I won't turn it on now because there's no point, and he's going to be here in 15 minutes. In fact, sure, maybe he's going to be late. It doesn't matter. You turn it on, you start playing. Whenever this, your friend arrives, they just join your game, and you continue playing together then. And that's a beautiful thing. We're really, really happy that we managed to make that happen. I'm not going to lie to you. It's been a big challenge. It's a big technical challenge and design challenge to make sure that it feels right and that it doesn't feel awkward and the players still feel like they're progressing and they're not missing out on anything when these things come together. But we're really happy with the result.
And what about those that they probably don't have friends and they just got a system brand new, they got Ghost Recon. Yeah. Can they also find like random matches too, like other people that they're not on a friend list?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. So if you, I mean, I would stress that the game can be played completely like solo offline if you want. In that case, you're going to be playing with the AI teammates. If you don't have friends that are playing, or you know, your friend list isn't populated, that's fine. You can do matchmaking with others, and we're going to put you together with people. We have our filters that run and try to find the most appropriate players for you to play with.
And one of the things you guys learned while working this game, because there's other game that's similar to this, were there any things that you guys learned or got influenced by making some changes throughout the years while working this?
So it's a good question. I think, firstly, I would say that it's not always obvious from the outside, but the games as big as Ghost Recon Wildlands, they take a long time to make. So for us, in this case, it's almost 5 years. And so a lot of the systems we have, well, we do get this question of, you know, what came from this game, or, you know, did you take the parachute from this game or the progression from this other game? But in fact, we've been building it all along, and we've just found similar solutions to some other games, but it's very much the game that we've wanted to make. Now, of course, we're looking to our competitors. We're looking to the other games that are coming out. It's a fantastic time to be playing video games. There's a lot of quality games out there. But I would say that the game that we're making now is very much a product of that original goal of freedom of choice, freedom of movement. You know, do what you want, when you want. You move how you want through that world. And you do it with your friends in solo or co-op. That's been from the beginning. And then it's just been a case of us bringing that to a reality.
I know while driving around, because I'm into the whole music thing, so I'm like, all right, let me listen to this radio thing. And it's only one radio station, but I noticed that it also relates to like a lot with the story, and it changes too, right? Can you talk about that too?
Sure. So this is related to one aspect of the cartel business. So when we, one of the ways you can see the cartel organization, traditionally sometimes described like a family, but actually something of this scale is much more like a business, and they have different departments that'll handle certain affairs. So in our case, we've got four major operations. We've got smuggling, we've got production, we've got influence, and we've got security, right? So the smuggling, production, and security, those ones kind of make sense because it's the kind of stuff we're used to seeing in movies and stuff where they're producing this stuff, they're shipping the stuff, and then they've got the heavies that are looking after the people that are, you know, their money and making sure everything, all their product gets around. But something we discovered as we were doing a lot of research on this is that it's as important the kind of influence part of this, which is they hold religious ceremonies, they have they put on concerts, they hire narco corridos. This is a real thing, you know, that happens. These guys are like special musicians who just write music about the cartels, basically making songs about how awesome they are and how, you know, the people that die as a result of being part of the cartels are like martyrs and they're kind of celebrated like heroes. And then, but they'll also do things like build hospitals and build churches. And it's like, oh, wow, they're doing something for the community. But in fact, what they're doing is blackmailing people and extortion. It's the public side makes it look very good. But in fact, what they're trying to do is like win hearts and minds easily. And then at some point, they'll just resort to violence. Right?
I noticed there was one part I was driving around and I think they were like threatening someone. Mm-hmm. And I think after a while, I think they beat them up or something like that.
Yeah. So this is, of course, that's it. I mean, at some point they'll try, and if they're resisting, then they have no problem with hurting them, which is a shame. But in terms of like the things like the radio station, what that means is like in reality, these guys do have podcasts. They have, you know, like music channels and music stations, and they have DJs, and they play, you know, it's a basically propaganda machine. And so that's why you have this kind of singular radio station playing stuff about the cartel. But of course, it's going to be feeding back the fact that you're starting to take down aspects of the cartel, that you're destabilizing their business. That's going to be reflected in part through the radio. That's one of the ways we do it.
The difficulty in the game, is it based on, like, let's say you go to a mission and you could see the difficulty if it's high or not. Is it based on how many enemies or how, like their weapons or health? Like, what is it? Why is it so difficult?
Why it's so difficult? Well, it's there as a variety, so it's not always the same throughout the game. We have difficulty comes in a couple of forms where we have, on the way into the game, you can choose to kind of like an easy, medium, hard. And that's going to affect basically how enemies target you during the game. It's not really number of enemies, it's more like their efficiency when they're shooting at you. And then you have, in a per province basis and a permission basis, you've got difficulty settings that are going to let you see, okay, you should be wary, this one's going to get tough, right? And those are often like an assault on a base, or ones that involve the Unidad, or going after a boss. Those ones you're going to see a spike in difficulty. And it's not one thing that makes it more difficult. It's a mix of the types of ingredients you're going to be up against, whether there's things like drone jammers or surface-to-air missiles or sniper towers or, you know, electric fences and spotlights and that kind of thing. But also the types of enemies you're going to see. Are they armored? Do they have heavy weapons? A little bit to do with the number of enemies to a certain degree, but it's a bit more about their efficiency, because at some point there's more enemies, you just keep spraying bullets in and it's not any more difficult, it just takes longer. Whereas something we wanted to make sure was the AI was always interesting, always making smart choices, especially reacting to the way the player can do the missions in any order and come at camps from any side. They have to be adaptable. So just throwing more enemies wasn't really an option.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I had a great time. Great. Especially co-op. Co-op was a lot of fun. Date, release date?
So Ghost Recon Wildlands will be out on March 7th on Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PC.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
My name is Nordin Aboud, and I'm the senior producer on Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Let me tell you, I've been playing this now for a couple of hours, and I've been having a blast, especially co-op. the game is, it could get really, really challenging, man. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of fun. So how was it for you guys, especially for you? Like, I know you guys have been working on this for a while now, and how's it been the experience, man? You know, now the game is finally coming up in a few months.
It's great because, especially in this game, what we wanted to have is the freedom of choice, the freedom for the people to play it their way. And when you say that, actually, the only way to know how the game is going to be played is actually seeing people play it. If we had a more linear game, we'll have better ideas initially. But here, with all this freedom, the more we can see people playing it during playtests with gamers, but also when the media play it, it's great. And I must admit that we are still discovering things about how the people play it. So that's great to see that the freedom we put all our energy on for so many times is right now appreciated by the people who see it.
And there's a lot of freedom. You could go anywhere in the game, but by doing that, you could also go to some difficult areas too, right? So that's challenging. It could get really, really challenging too, man. So for you, like, what is it that you like to do more as a gamer while playing this game? Are you more of like the solo type or co-op?
For me, I mean, obviously the co-op is very interesting because actually you can be playing with other people. And, you know, I mean, as a producer, I spend lots of time with big teams, many people working on projects, and having the opportunity then to do other things with sometimes the same people, like my workmates, and playing in co-op is always a great moment. I play solo, sometimes not the same games. For instance, in the case of Ghost Recon, the big thing is, each time you look at playing this game with three other people, it's very important to have in mind who you're playing with it. And for instance, let's say you want to play fully stealth, hide, etc.
I try that, and I think I find that way more challenging, and I love it. I love that more than just rushing it, you know? So take your time, right?
Exactly. But if you happen to be playing with three guys who don't care, who just rush it and who put the alarm on all the time, and no matter what you do, then it's not so much about saying, I need to change group, but trying to adapt who have the play. So for me, that's the most exciting thing in this game when I play it, is after, let's say, 5-10 minutes, I get a good idea of who I'm playing with. And on top of that, because the game has this drop-in, drop-out approach, because of the matchmaking, when we make tests on bigger groups of people, what I can see is that very quickly, the people who like to play a little bit like you, they stay. People who want to play in another way, they kind of drop out. And this is also very exciting. It's not just about adapting to the people you play with, but it's also discovering new people when you play in this open matchmaking.
So what happened, one of my friends are higher levels than me, is it going to be a lot easier for me, or the game becomes more difficult?
In fact, funnily enough, we were able to do something that was very challenging for us, but we started with this idea very at the very first moment. You can set up the difficulty of the game, but it's also set by characters. So you could be basically playing hardcore and playing with somebody who's going to play in easy mode. In the very same map, in the very same mission, we can have people who have a different experience. So yes, of course, all the systems are interacting, but basically you can have a guy who is going a very difficult situation because people are shooting at him and it's very easy for him to die, and other people who are going to have a lighter experience. This is what we wanted from the very beginning. The big thing for us was, let's get rid of all the issues that are usually making those experiences more difficult. Difficulty to find people, this is why we have the matchmaking. Difficulty to be able to play the way you want, this is why we have the whole game which is based on the freedom. Issues by having smaller maps, this is why we have this big open world. But at the same time, we kept the core of what is Ghost Recon, which is a military shooter. So you still have all the things people like, which is being stealth, assault, having the funky tools like the drone, having the customization with the gunsmith, the customization of the character. So really, all the core things of a military shooter, and then adding all the things that make it really exciting nowadays to play a game.
And talk about, too, about the vehicles, because there's so many vehicles, motorcycle, helicopters, too. You can talk about that, too, for the listeners?
Yeah, it's great because you have around 60 vehicles, but what is exciting is that they're very varied. So it's not just cars. Yes, we have cars, four-wheel drive, etc., but you also have motorbikes. We also have planes, helicopters, boats. And when it gets really crazy is when you understand that all those elements are movable from any mission to the other. So basically, our motto is, if you can see it, you can steal it and you can drive it. So you have access to lots of stuff, but then you can also, let's say, decide to hide some vehicles for later on for another mission, or decide to steal something from one of the mission and use it in the other. So lots of vehicles, lots of combinations in co-op, but also lots of ways of mixing those vehicles with all the missions you have in the game.
I was playing co-op with a couple of friends here, and I was trying to steal the helicopter, but they were flying. It was really tough to, but we just basically destroy it at the end. But there's a way to also steal it like
yes.
that.
With the helicopter, yeah. Yes, everything is stealable. I think it's also depending on a lot to who you play the game with, you know. And usually what we say is that in order to find the right balance, it takes a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. But the good thing, and this is what shows the big variety of people who play our games, we have people who sometimes want very hard difficulty, basically are going to play in what we call the ghost mode, so it's very hardcore. Then other people who just want to go through the story as fast as possible. So for us, what is great is because of this freedom we have in the game, we can basically adjust to all the people and their taste and the level of difficulty that they're looking for.
And Gunsmith is back, right? How important was that to bring that back?
Can you say again?
Gunsmith?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why was it so important to bring that back?
Yeah, Gunsmith was important because, one, I worked on the previous Ghost Recon, but also the one before, so I've been working on this for 10 years, and we have people who even worked more years. So for us, all those elements are even part of our life. And the good thing is because there are things that we've developed so we can make them even better. So Gunsmith was important because we knew that the people loved it, and being able to customize your guns, it's a great element because then it can mean that you're going to set the guns for the mission you're going to be playing, but also because we were able to expand, make it even more deep and more linked to the missions. And on top of that, we also had this idea at the end of Future Soldier of trying to smith as many things as possible inside the game. So we have the gunsmith, but we also have the character smith. So you can customize and play either male or female. You can choose to wear a hat. You can choose your gear. You can have tattoos, facial hair. So gunsmith, character smith, lots of customization possibilities.
And how that also affect the game based on that?
So on this, for us, the big thing is to be as natural as possible. So what I mean by that is that let's say if you look at the gunsmith, we give you the possibility of choosing how you're going to, what sort of cartridges you're going to have, or are you going to use a silencer or not. So those things are very important. And also what you must have in mind is things also have small impacts on how you're going to interact in co-op with the other people, and how you're going to each of you try to have a different approach.
And my last question, there's other games similar to this. What makes this game different than the other ones and why?
So the big thing, and I dare to say that it's the only game that is at the same time a very deep military shooter, but it's happening in such a large open world map with so many missions that you can play the way you want. And that on top of that, you can play co-op or solo without being stuck in one of the modes. So for me, it's this big thing. You launch the game. You don't need to think about who you're going to be playing with. You don't need to think which mission you're going to play. You don't need to think about what's going to be your approach. You can basically improvise because the game is giving you all those tools. And from this point of view, we believe that there's no game that is bringing this level of freedom on the market.
Well, the release date of the game?
March 7, 2017.
Thanks a lot, man.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Back on the scene. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're back here, Gamertag Radio, episode 629. Pete Paris, anything you guys want to say, man? We have a lot of voicemails and emails, which we're going to release this on Monday. It's a lot of great questions, man. Still, man, the debate about Nintendo Switch, about Scorpio, and even about the places of VR. So a couple of people asked me a couple of questions about that too. So you guys have anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's it. I mean, like you said, I think Sunday we'll dive into a lot of the listener reactions and start talking about this stuff all over again.
All right. So I have one final question for you guys. Falcons or Patriots?
I'm going to say Falcons.
Silence, huh?
I'm going to say Falcons.
My gut is saying Falcons too, but dude, it's Tom Brady, man. And Belichick has 2 weeks to scheme against that offense. That's what I keep thinking. If Belichick, and think about it, all Belichick has to do is slow Matt Ryan down a couple times because the Patriot offense is going to score on the Falcon defense, right? I was telling my son this earlier. You have to score at least 34 points in this game if you want to win. That's the way I look at it. It's going to be a very high scoring game.
The thing about this, though, is that Atlanta defense is underrated. That's a good.
Yeah,
it's Tom Brady. Though.
And remember, that's Dan Quinn defense from Seattle. He brought that over.
It's Tom Brady.
I know.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Unless they get to him and they knock him on his tuchus, you don't blitz Brady because he will eat you alive.
And that's a defense built for speed that can get to the quarterback quickly. So
it's Tom Brady. That's all I'm going to say. I'm respecting the game. I'm just going to respect the game and say that's Tom Brady. I'm not saying nothing crazy like that. My gut tells me Atlanta, but it will not shock me to see the Patriots win this.
Gut says Atlanta, but your wallet says the Patriots.
Yeah, if I had to put money on it, I think I would go Patriots if I had to spend some money on it.
One more question. Pete doesn't watch wrestling, but Paris, any predictions for this weekend's Royal Rumble?
You know, this is where you saw Goldberg screw up his promo. That was funny. But
That was pretty funny. Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously going to do something wacky with Goldberg and Lesnar to get them out of there. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't shock me if The Undertaker won it, but I don't think he will. I think they're going to we're not seeing who's going to win. They're throwing all these different red herrings at us and we're not seeing who's going to win. But I think end of the day,
I'll tell you this. I think we might see Kurt Angle a little quick, you know.
They pulled him. He was supposed to wrestle an indie show and they pulled him.
And they pulled him. Yep. It's for this.
Dude, he's the last dude, I'm telling you, he's the last guy that I will mark out for when I hear the music. He's the last one. I just one more time. Just give it to me.
Really? You think he's going to come out last? The last wrestler?
No. I'm saying I just want to see him one more time in a match. That's all I'm saying. Okay, just give me one more match with him. Be it the Rumble, if he wrestles at WrestleMania or whatever. One more match. I just want to hear the music one time and him to go, it's true. You know it's true. I just want to hear it one time. That's it.
Who do you think might show up for NXT as a surprise? It could be anyone, man.
I think it's time for Samoa Joe. Honestly, it's well overdue for Samoa Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
They really want to do a surprise and really hype it, Nakamura.
Oof, that would be a nice one. Okay,
people will go crazy.
All right, on that note, we're going to finish here. Gamer Tag Radio, episode 629. And continue sending questions. Continue calling our voicemails or go to speakpipe.com/gamertagradio. And send us questions over there. So go to gamertagradio.com or play.it/gamertag. Listen to our past episodes. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, and other podcast directories.
Send us your feedback or questions. Yep. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, until next time, we are out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.